Democrats are not going to make the president's tax cuts permanent, and the president's not going to sign an expansion of stem cell research.
This is Talk Back with Chuck Morse.
Illegal is a false distinction, and the fact that there's so many people here now working proof.
Whether it's happening in Nashua or anywhere in the world.
The gas prices are getting outrageous.
The volatility is extraordinary.
I want to take a little bit of issue with you.
Talk about it.
Here is how we change the world.
603-883-9900.
Hello, thank you for taking my question.
603-883-9900. It's time to Talk Back with Chuck Morse on Nashua's News and Talk, 1590 WSMN.
Do you realize how unstoppable this guy is?
Online at WSMNradio.com.
Good morning, Nashua. Good morning, New Hampshire. Good morning, America. You're listening to the second hour of Talk Back with your host, Chuck Morse, 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. It's Thursday afternoon, April 16th, 2008. You're welcome to join us at 603-883-9900, 603-883-9900. Just a programming note, I shall be out on assignment, so to speak, tomorrow and Monday, and Laura Ingram will be here, well, not here in the studio, but filling in, so to speak, for this program. So I shall return, God willing, next Tuesday at 9 a.m., where I shall continue my post here as the live host Monday through Friday from 9 to 11 a.m. Peter Safason is live in the studio. He is the head of the New England Anti-Mascot Coalition. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You came to my attention because of a news story reported by Darren Root here, our news director, regarding Spalding High School, Red Raiders football team in Rochester. Your organization wants to remove the name Red Raiders and any other reference to Native American peoples in sports teams around the country.
Well, the term Red Raiders is not specifically referencing Native Americans or American Indians, but at Spalding High School, they actually have a bright red-faced Indian man as their logo. Texas Tech University are also known as the Red Raiders, and it's a gentleman in a black hat.
But I mean, my high school, North Quincy High, had Red Raiders, but it was,
they still do.
They do, but it was not, it had nothing to do with Native American there either.
Their logo certainly looks like a Native American.
It looks like it, but it wasn't. It actually was this Armenian kid
dressed as an Indian.
Was he?
Certainly.
Okay.
In the logo, he's got two feathers in his hair and a tomahawk.
Oh, does he? Okay. Mm-hmm. I always thought that I wasn't sure about the connection there, but I think they removed the logo. At least they did when I went to my reunion, and it was no longer.
It's still there. Just it's still like on their website.
Is it?
Absolutely.
Just like they pulled the arrow out of the hat of the Mass Pike, which I used to love, but. I agree with you in that some of the images are offensive. We talked about the image of the Cleveland Indians, that actual red-faced smiling guy.
Chief Wahoo. Yes.
Yeah, I mean that to me makes me uncomfortable. I don't think that's a positive image of Native Americans, and it's sort of an old-fashioned thing that is very similar, as I was mentioning, to the old lawn jockey image of African Americans,
right,
that you might have seen prop up perhaps before the 1960s,
right,
and that was recently on the cover of Nation magazine with the face of Clarence Thomas, which I thought was a despicable image of him.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think that those images have been removed, and rightfully, but I think that what I see here is that you're really throwing the bathwater out with the baby by removing all of them, because I actually believe that you're stripping away a portion of American culture and American history that the result will be in a sense a kind of like what Stalin used to do. He would whitewash various images of people out of pictures when they were no longer politically correct.
Well, I think,
and you're going to have a very gray, very drab society, and the end result, as far in my opinion, is actually a stripping away of public awareness of Native peoples.
I think if people are only aware of American Indians from these mascots, then I think we're already pretty gray and already whitewashing history, where The Native American population in his country accounts for less than 1% of the total population, when a couple hundred years ago, white people were vastly outnumbered, and Europeans and Americans kind of worked their way west, killing Indians along the way,
right,
taking their land and putting them on reservations. I don't think public schools in this country, certainly not in Massachusetts, where I live, and in New Hampshire, where I grew up, are teaching our children enough or anything at all, really, of significance about Native American history and the genocide that they experienced over 300 or 400 years.
Well, look, I agree with you in that I'm not sure that it's necessary to go so far as to have a Native American studies. However, teaching of Native American history as part of American history, I think, is something that is lacking, and that there should be more of it, and it should be a balanced examination of the Indian Wars and all of the rest. But specifically regarding your group, which is focused on the question of mascots on teams, while there are certainly some offensive images that need to be changed, I think that in general, the images are quite positive and a part of our culture. It's a depiction of the warrior culture that was a good part of the American Indian culture historically. And that is something that I think Native American people ought to be proud of and are proud of, in the same way that New England Patriots are proud of the Minuteman image that we have right here on Main Street in Nashua. If you go over to Slosby's Insurance Company, right around the corner from Indian Head Plaza, which is where we are,
mm-hmm,
you see a large copper statue of the Minuteman holding the rifle. The New England Patriots, I think, has a Minuteman image. You know, in a sense, warrior images are part of the culture, and I don't think that, or the Western image of the Western cowboy. I don't think that, to me, these are, first of all, they're accurate, and secondly, I don't think that they're negative. And to remove it, I think we're going to lose something, and Native American people are going to lose something.
No,
yes,
disagree.
Take away the
racist.
I don't
think we're going to lose anything. And frankly, as far as accuracy, these images of Native Americans as warriors are racial stereotypes, and they don't belong in publicly funded, federally funded public schools.
Well, first of all, nobody is suggesting that Native American peoples today are warriors. They're historic images, and they are not.
Right.
And they're not stereotypes.
Images from the past, and they are racial stereotypes, because if you look at many of the logos used by high schools who have these themes,
right,
they have a full Indian headdress. I'm speaking specifically of New England high schools, and these schools are depicting people from the plains. The Native Americans who are indigenous to New England did not wear full headdresses.
Right.
But
no,
according to the Hollywood and Wild West show stereotype, that's what people recognize as Indian. So let's use that. That is a stereotype, plain and simple.
Well, I mean, I'm not so sure it's a negative stereotype. I mean, certainly the... first of all, I think that New England tribes did have used feathers, and you know, you can see this if you go over to the plantation in Plymouth, you know, where they have a reenactment of the
right.
Wampanoag peoples. Obviously, there are many variations on the theme, but I mean, certainly not all Minutemen looked like the guy holding the rifle wearing the three-cornered hat either. So sure. You know, there are images that have become famous. Not all cowboys wore the 3-gallon hat. Not all Texans look the way they do with leather chaps. But I guess that what I'm trying to say is it's not necessarily, and I don't think it is, a negative image. I think it's something that Native American people would be proud of. I mean, if I were Native American, I'd be proud of the fact that there are teams that are out there, you know, doing heroic things, playing football, winning, you know, being warrior-like. I mean, this is a part of history.
How is scoring a football, scoring a touchdown in a football game warrior-like?
Well,
it's a game.
I'll tell you why. Because since we no longer have wars in this country, thank God, And since there are
we take them to other parts of the world.
I mean, well, maybe, but we're talking about America right now, and I don't. We can talk about that as a separate matter.
Probably.
Yeah. And since there hasn't been an Indian war since the massacre at Wounded Knee in 1892, we do express aggression, if you will, through the peaceful arts of sports. That's just a fact, and I don't I don't view that as a negative thing. So, you know, instead of going out and having a shooting war, we go out and we cheer our teams, and they engage in a peaceful form of war.
Well, typically the images and the nicknames that sports teams use, especially in high schools, is something fierce. Sure. Typically, you'll have a lot of animals, tigers, right. Bears, birds like eagles,
sure.
Hawks.
Absolutely.
And then you have Indians.
Right.
These are themes that are stereotypes. They stereotype American Indians as warlike and aggressive and warrior-like, as you were saying earlier, when in fact many Native American tribes, especially in New England, were peaceful.
Some were, some weren't, but I mean, certainly
some were.
Well, that's right, but Prince Philip was not peaceful. I mean, the...
King Philip was a warrior because he was fighting against the colonists making a valiant attempt to...
wipe out every white person in New England.
On his land, yes.
Not on his land.
And speaking of Indian Head Plaza, do you know how King Philip ended his life?
He was
beheaded, and his head
he lost the war.
Was placed on a pike Plymouth and was put on display in Plymouth for a generation.
King Philip, I mean, just to go through a little history on this, as far as I can see it, his father, Chief Massasoit, was a peaceful Indian who basically was trying to coexist with the settlers for reasons that had something to do with a trial in which somebody was convicted of murder, a Native American. And back then, the trials had equal part Native and white people in those cases. He became infuriated, and when he became king of the Massasoit tribe, he spent several years organizing a confederation of tribes throughout New England and even making contact with tribes in other parts of the colonies in New York, with the idea that there would be a day in which they would fall upon all the white people and kill them all. And the only reason it didn't happen is because about a week before the due day, there was an informant in his circle who tipped off the governor of Massachusetts. And there was still some terrible, fearful massacres, but there was enough time to coordinate and fight back, and eventually the Indians got wiped out. But, you know, this is, I mean, it's just a piece of history. But the point is that King Philip, who is glorified at King Philip High School.
And do you know what the logo is for the King Philip High School Warriors?
What is it?
A head. Well, King Philip's head.
You know, look it. I mean, they lost the war just like, I mean,
so
the Nazis.
So tough luck for them.
No, but the Nazis lost the war in Europe.
Can you imagine if the United States was invaded by another country and we didn't stand up against that invasion? I mean, that's what happened.
Well, there was a clash of cultures.
From 1492 until 1890, it was an invasion.
Well, I think there was a clash of cultures. It's very similar to any time you have people moving from point A to point B. And, I suppose ultimately, unfortunately, it had to result in a war, but it didn't necessarily have to. There could have been either a coexistence or an assimilation. I mean, the same factors are at play today in the Arab-Israel conflict. You know, can they coexist? Can they somehow find some kind of a rapprochement? Or is it going to be war, and eventually one side is going to win? Maybe, you know, we're talking about broader questions here, I suppose, of human nature.
Yeah, and this is really the kind of discussion that should really be taking place in our public schools, and I really don't think it is.
Well, I agree with
because
that.
Because what kids know today about American Indians is their
theme. You and I, Peter, should go to and make a presentation together on opposite sides at public schools.
I'm all for that.
All right, we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
The Carriage Homes at Woodland Pond, convenient upscale condominium living. Now building phase two at pre-construction pricing starting at $224,900. 1,500 square feet of energy-efficient single-level living with open floor plans. Two bedrooms, two full baths, fireplace, garage, and a private club. Just minutes from downtown Manchester. Nothing compares anywhere. Come see for yourself. Call 603-589-2380, extension 2241, or go to carriagehomesnh.com.
If you like motorcycles, snow machines, and four-wheelers, then RJ's Motorsports at 421 Amherst Street in Nashua is the place for you. They offer the area's largest selection of men's and women's riding apparel, and they are home to RPM Dyno Tuning. Join RJ's for their 12th Annual Customer Appreciation Day, Saturday and Sunday, May 3rd and 4th. There's a free cookout, tons of prizes, and a legendary horsepower shootout. Go to rjsmotorsport.com or call 603-595-8534.
Is your retail business in the best location? It would be if you leased at Nashua's 14A Broad Street Plaza. The 14A Broad Street Plaza is a high-traffic, high-visibility location with easy in-and-out parking. And right now, there is a 2,250-square-foot unit available for immediate lease. Give yourself the edge for success at one of Nashua's premier retail locations, the 14A Broad Street Plaza. For more information, call Jerry DiGrezio at 880-0502. 880-0502. The 14A Broad Street Plaza, where your business will be in good company.
Check on the program schedule or listen live on your computer. It's all at WSMNradio.com.
We are back, I believe. Talk back with yours truly, Chuck Morse, 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. You're welcome to join the conversation, 603-883-9900, 603-883-9900. My guest is Peter Safasson. He is the coordinator and director of the New England Anti-Mascot Coalition. Peter, just to reiterate a little bit, I think that while certainly there are some images that obviously will make us uncomfortable, and we know what those are because you feel it, it's sort of like what I think was it Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas once said, how do you define pornography? He goes, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it.
Right.
You know, there are certainly some images that are inappropriate and should be changed. My only concern is that I think that the warrior image is a positive image if it's presented properly, like the Minuteman is, or the Western is. And by throwing all of it out, we're taking a not only a significant part of our culture and history, but we're actually making American Indians invisible, which I think is actually racist.
Well, I think the invisibility is actually inherent in these icons because that's all kids know.
Well, and I also agree.
How many people in New Hampshire even know an American Indian?
No, look, I agree with you as well in that American Indian history should be integrated into the teaching of American history more. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it needs to have a separate department. Maybe. Why not?
I think at least a course.
Or something.
Spalding in Rochester now has a semester course in North American Indian Studies.
Right.
Where it focuses on American Indian history rather than just westward expansion, manifest destiny,
sure.
and pioneers. You know, it's more from the Indian perspective.
Right. Well,
For a semester.
No, I mean, I think that's okay. I mean, I think that that's a point well taken. Certainly, the wars between the Europeans and the Indians should be covered, and I hopefully covered in a balanced way, not in a one-sided way
sure,
that favors only the Indian side, because
Absolutely.
There was plenty of warfare and violence on both sides in those wars. Anyway, tell me about the, is this like, are you part of a national movement here? Is this a...
I'm part of a network of American Indians and civil rights groups around the country. And this is a national issue. Professional sports teams, colleges, high schools, a lot of sports teams have been using Native American culture as their nicknames and
sure, always have.
And,
I mean,
and
it's,
logos
it's nothing new.
Since the 1920s.
And probably before. I mean, probably since the inception of public sports teams, I would imagine. I don't know the history of it, but hasn't it been? It's not something that just happened yesterday.
No, and in fact, around the time, the early 20th century, when these nicknames were beginning to be used by mostly white schools, American Indians were being so-called assimilated into white society by taking children from reservations in Nebraska and South Dakota and bringing them to Pennsylvania
right.
and other places in the East to unlearn their culture and their languages and become more white.
No, no
and
question.
That's what has helped make, at least to the dominant white society, American Indians invisible.
Well, there's
that
no,
was their goal.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the goal of assimilation.
No,
you're like us now.
Absolutely. And I think that if you take a look, for example, at the racial, for whatever, for lack of a better word, because the whole concept of race is a mysterious concept, but of Americans who were here starting in the 19th century, going all the way from the earliest days up until the 19th century, you'll find that that probably more than half, if not 60-70% have some Indian blood, and that Indians did, a large portion of American Indians did assimilate into the culture. I mean, in Massachusetts, you had the Praying Indians of Natick and of Nonantum in Newton that, you know, they became Christian early, and they, you know, they did eventually, I think, mostly assimilate into the culture.
Right, and in Natick specifically, they eventually lost all their land.
But they eventually just, I mean, they no longer maintained a separate ethnic identity. I mean, they're just white. I mean, they're not that they aren't white anyways. I don't know if there's actually any difference between white people and Indians racially. But putting that aside, they lost their ethnic identity and they became part of, I don't know, you might say the WASPs. I mean, the English people that that are here today.
Right.
Or is that accurate? I mean.
I think that's fairly accurate, but you know that again points to assimilation and,
sure.
and where American Indians have lost their culture, whether voluntarily or by force.
By that forcible means, although I think it was mostly voluntarily, and
well, certainly tribes and individuals who converted to Christianity,
right.
Which to a degree.
Which was a large percentage, and which they sought to, they went into the cities and they assimilated. Now, in today's model, people might maintain a separate identity and yet at the same time assimilate. That didn't, you know, for example, I mean, I use this example often, Orthodox Jews, ultra-Orthodox. In my neighborhood where I live, there's a good number of them, and they're very distinctive in their appearance
sure.
and in their practices. But at the same time, they're completely assimilated. They're very as American as apple pie. I mean, they don't, you know, they're not, I mean, they're in the professions. They live amongst everyone else. For reasons that are interesting, that didn't happen in the case of Indians, in that they literally lost their entire identities. Okay, we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back.